Hey,
are you listening?
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call
OTR Rob.
Seemed to be waiting for someone. He was a big guy with a good face, but plenty of worry on it.
Spade?
Yeah, Mr. Starbuck. Dan Starbuck. Come on down to the end of the pier. I'll explain if you go along. We got hurt. You act hot. You wanted for something?
What?
Not yet.
What's the caper?
Well, my brother's out there on his yacht, the Marguerite. He's dying. When he's dead, they may call it murder. I want to be there with a witness. That's you. In case he has anything to say about who did it.
Who did?
They think I did.
Did you?
Well, honestly, I don't know. It happened night before last. I went out there to see him. We've hated each other for years. We've both been drinking, and we drank some more. Then there was a fight. I drew a blank somewhere. Next thing I knew, it was around midnight. I pulled myself together, went into his cabin. Gordon was lying there with his head all caked. I realized I was covered with blood, and I was holding something in my hand, big glass paperweight. I dropped it. I got out of there fast and swam ashore. I planned to tell you a different story, but that's it. You want the job or not?
You think you'll make a deathbed statement that'll clear you, and you want me for a witness?
Yeah, that's it.
You got a lot of guts. I'm hired.
Good.
Halverson? You down there? Halverson!
Who's Halverson? Hey, he's the boatman. He'll row us out.
Halverson! Hey, Neil!
Johnny?
Yeah. That you, Casino?
Sure. Can I do you some favor?
I want to go out to the Marguerite. I can't find Halverson anywhere.
Oh, I guess I can take him. Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Sam Spade, Del Casino. He's the boss of the Marguerite.
Glad to meet you.
Sam.
Any fun at Danny's? Hey, listen, Danny, you sure you want to go out there?
Any reason why you shouldn't?
Well, it's up to him. In his place, I would be on a freighter from China, way out there where the fog is more thicker.
No, it's all right, Casino. I know what I'm doing.
Well, your friend, you excuse me, your name?
Spade.
You pardon me, I better ask. The police don't want you for nothing?
Not yet, but don't make book on it.
Push us clear, Danny.
All right.
This fog is closing in, but I can still see the lights from the Marguerite. I wish we don't find her.
Diggers, an off-the-shoulder t-shirt, and was leaning against the rail as the dinghy pulled past the police launch and nestled in under the ladder of the yacht.
Del? Del, is that you?
Yes, Miss Starbuck.
Who is that with you?
Keep quiet.
Del. Del, what are they saying ashore about? Oh, I thought you...
You're Mrs. Starbuck?
Yes?
I'm Sam Spade. I'm from San Francisco. I'm a detective. Your brother-in-law's on the boat.
You captured him?
He wants to come aboard.
He wants to... Why?
He's hoping your husband will say something to clear him before he dies. Is there any reason why he shouldn't come aboard?
Oh, there's every reason in the world why he shouldn't. The police are in there with my husband right now.
Yeah?
The doctor says there's a possibility that he may regain consciousness long enough to make a dying declaration.
Mm-hmm.
If he's face to face with Dan, there's no telling what he'll say. I wish Dan wouldn't. My husband is dying.
Dan?
Yeah. What's he say?
I don't know, but I think you better come aboard. He seemed almost delighted as he swung his weight up out of the dinghy and climbed the ladder. Del Casino, the bosun, followed, wearing a puzzled expression that turned to fear as we entered the cabin. The yellow glare from the lamp swinging overhead was almost blinding to walk into out of the foggy night. The first thing I focused on was the bunk that held the dying man. His head was heavily bandaged, his skin was chalk white, and his lips were beginning to turn blue. The room was tense with waiting. Ranged around him in a semicircle were the supporting players. Two doctors, one family type with a nurse, one police medic without, one sheriff with cigar, one police stenographer, female with pencil and notebook poised, 9/10 of a widow, and us. At 7:18, somebody moved. A dying man. The two doctors rushed forward, took his pulse and blood pressure.
Let's go. Adrenaline 3cc, calming 1, so many.
Oh.
All right, Sheriff, he's conscious now, but... You'd better hurry.
Margaret. Mr. Starbuck, you can hear me all right? Think that now.
Can you hear me? Affirmative answer.
Now, Mrs. Starbuck, we have to ask these questions. One, what is your name? Please try to answer. What is your name?
Gordon M. Starr.
You got that?
What is your name, Gordon M. Starr?
That's close enough. Fill it in later. Now, Mr. Starbuck, where do you live? Where do you live?
I'm dead.
You got that? 1277 Marymount, Pasadena.
Hey.
Now, Mr. Starbuck, let's try a little harder, hmm? This is a long one. Have you been injured, and what was the cause of your injury?
Yes. Hurts my...
You got that?
Affirmative.
Now, the second part. What was the cause of your injury?
Head.
Huh?
Head on head.
Do you believe that you're about to die as a result of your injuries, or have you no hope of recovery? Now, let's get to the point. Who inflicted said injuries?
My.
Mr. Starbuck, please, you haven't much time, you know.
Go away.
Doc, is there anything you can do?
I'm afraid not.
This is ghastly. Can't you leave him alone? Can't you let him die in peace?
What are you afraid of, Maggie? What are you afraid he'll say?
All right. All right, tell them, Gordon. It was Dan that struck you, wasn't it? He was jealous. He always hated you for marrying me. It was Dan.
Now, Mrs. Starbuck, I know how you feel, but we can't allow this sort of thing. Please step aside so we can finish up here. Mr. Starbuck. Doctor?
Very low pulse. I'm not sure.
Dan. Is Dan here?
Here I am, Gordon. Tell him the truth.
Do you identify this man, Mr. Starbuck?
Lying. Gordon, you know who did it. Why don't you tell the truth? What do you got to lose now?
Nothing. Nothing. I'm finished. You finished me.
Gordon! Gordon, not yet. I'll come back. Doctor, cancer.
He's dead. Well.
Okay, Doc. In a Starbuck, it is my duty as sheriff of this county to take you into custody on suspicion of murder. I must tell you that anything you say may be held against you. You better come along too, Spade. Routine questioning, you know.
Okay, sir.
Well, I don't think we'll need the handcuffs, will we, son?
No, I'll go with you.
Yes, indeed, son. It's always smart to come along quietly.
Yeah.
Hey, Sam, come back here.
Put your hand.
Starbuck. But Dell hadn't lived long enough to make a dying declaration.
The makers of Wild Root Cream Oil are presenting the weekly Sunday adventure of Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, Sam Spade. You get ahead socially and on the job. Listen, recently thousands of people from coast to coast who bought Wild Root Cream Oil for the first time were asked, how does Wild Root Cream Oil compare with the hair tonic you previously used? The results were amazing. better than 4 out of 5 who replied said they preferred Wild Root Cream Oil. And no wonder. It gives you the advantages that men consider most important. Wild Root Cream Oil grooms your hair neatly and naturally, relieves annoying dryness, and removes loose dandruff. What's more, non-alcoholic Wild Root Cream Oil is the only leading hair tonic that contains soothing lanolin that's like the oil of your skin. So ask for Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. By the way, smart girls use Wild Root Cream Oil too, and mothers say it's grand for training children's hair. And now, back to Caper with Two Deathbeds. Tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
Casino killing went something like this. Casino had shoved off in the dinghy to join in the search for Dan Starbuck, had rescued him and been maced for his pain. Also found in the dinghy, but not as yet worked into the police theory, were two items. One, a waterproof wallet containing the seaman's papers of one Nils Halvorsen. Two, a tattoo mark on the right bicep of the deceased. A small heart with a name in it, Maggie. Brand new widow of the same name was waiting in my office when I got there the following afternoon.
Hello.
Hello to you, Mrs. Starbuck. What can I do for you?
Mr. Spade, I know very little about the ethics of your profession, and... Well, are you still working for Danny?
If you mean, do I know where he is, the answer's no.
Oh, I hoped you'd say that.
Why?
Because I want you to work for me.
Need a new bosun?
You needn't have put it quite so crudely.
No, I didn't.
Since your work is confidential, I'll admit I've done a few things, but... Well, it's all too true. My first mistake was marrying Gordon Starbuck when I didn't love him. And I should never have let myself fall in love with Dan. I certainly should have known better than to let Dell fall in love with me.
What about Nils Halvorsen?
And me? Well, hardly. No. Nils Halvorsen was employed by my husband for various odd jobs whenever we put in at Sausalito. Mostly he'd row the guests out of the ship. He rowed Danny out the night my husband was killed. At least I think he did. I didn't actually see him.
Where's Halvorsen now?
I don't know. He goes off on drunks for days at a time, but I have a feeling that someone has paid him to disappear. He might have overheard something.
Hold on a minute. You're going too fast. Are you, working up to a confession?
Oh, no. It's just that I'm afraid a great injustice may have been done to Danny. After all, Mr. Spade, a man who's dying, I don't see how he could be altogether in his right mind. Do you?
The law says he is if he knows his name and address. A deathbed accusation is as strong as evidence a lawyer can shove at a jury. You can't cross-examine a dead man, and most people have the quaint idea that a man on his deathbed is a lot more truthful than he was when he was hale and hearty.
Then you think Gordon may have been lying?
Could be, or wool-gathering, or picking up some of the lines you were feeding him.
Oh, I was just afraid he might die before he... You see, I thought I might shock him into saying yes or no. He could have said no, couldn't he?
Well, make up your mind.
Oh, all I know is it's on my conscience now. If we could find old Halvorsen and force him to tell what he knows. He's a very strange man. He's devoted to me. If the police find him before I do, he might refuse to talk out of a mistaken loyalty.
To you?
Well, I meant if he thought I had anything to do with the... Well, he's very strange. I told you that.
What makes you so sure he's alive?
Why wouldn't he be?
If I'd been the killer and he'd rode me to and from the scene of my crime, I'd see him secured in Davy Jones' locker. Fish feed, lobster bait, asleep in the deep.
Will you work for me?
I'll let you know. I didn't have time to get tattooed, but the rest of me was marinated enough. On my head, I was wearing a dirtied-up yachting cap. And the rest of me, I was wearing a pea jacket, dungarees, and sea boots. I was also wearing clamshell number 5 as I rolled up to the Viking Saloon.
Well, what did it be, mate?
Aquavit and vodka.
Have you seen my cousin?
Your cousin? Who is your cousin, Prince Valiant?
No, but my cousin, Niels Halverson. Niels Halverson.
Oh, no. You're Niels' cousin, are you?
Yeah.
Well, coming from the old country?
Yeah, Minnesota. By you, Minnie.
Well, no, he'll be right glad to see you then.
Where, fair is he?
I don't want to say this too loud. Yeah. Bend over there.
Yeah.
He's in trouble, you know.
Oh,
yes. I got him holed up down below. Oh, yeah. Come on, come on.
Well, by golly, I sure have been glad to be going to see my cousin Niels. Niels Halverson.
Drop the axe
and get Jones ahead. Hey!
Okay, so I'll take over you, Niels.
Okay, Danny, the boy. I got his gun. But watch him now, watch him. He's full of smoking balls.
Well, Spade, you're the one person I didn't expect to see. But I'm very glad to.
Yeah, I wish I hadn't found you. I wanted to find somebody else first. Halverson?
Yeah, he's here.
Want to see him?
That's what I came for.
In under here.
Watch your head, low bridge.
Yeah. Here we are.
Where?
The boathouse under the pier. Halverson used the hole in here to sleep off his schnapps.
Where's he now?
Over here.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's going to be a long time sleeping this one off.
He'd been missing since that night. Nobody knew he was here until last night. I headed for the saloon when I swam ashore. Joe hid me out here. He could still talk then.
What'd he say?
I wrote it down here.
But it's no help.
Let's see it.
It's just a jumbled word. Marguerite. Marguerite. Merry Christmas drink. My beautiful Helga. Row, row your boat. Now throw me back. Row me back. $20 good and drunk. Fog rolling in. Good and drunk. Gonna be 5 days, no business. Oh, my head. Paint the boat.
Oh, crazy stuff.
$20, you give him 20 bucks to row you out?
I didn't even see him.
I swam out. My loving brother wouldn't have let me on board if he'd heard me arriving like a gentleman.
20 bucks.
Did you frisk him?
No.
I'll have a look. Soggy, but a 20.
I don't care. I'm sticking to my story. I swam out there. I didn't give him that 20.
Maybe you didn't. Maybe you didn't.
You gotta believe me. I didn't even have 20 bucks. That's why I
shut up.
What's the matter with you? What are you gonna do?
Come over here, Dan.
What?
I don't believe a word of your story. And even if I did, it wouldn't make any difference.
Well, what are you...
Shut up. You're going to stop talking and listen for a while. I stuffed a gag into his mouth and muscled him over to a piling and handcuffed him to it. He didn't even look surprised. He just stood there staring at me as if he'd lost his last friend in the world. But I wasn't looking at him as much as I was listening to those footsteps and the boards overhead. I waited for them to come back. They did. I walked across the soggy planks to where Nils Halverson lay in the shadows. Nils, I want you to answer these questions again. Now, this time, I'm going to take them down. You get lots of $20 and lots of drink. Now then, I know you don't feel so good. You don't have to talk if you don't feel like it. Just nod your head for yes and shake it for no. Okay, Nils? That counts in a court of law, as long as there's a witness. Okay. Now, your name is Nils Halverson. Your address is 213 Bayview, Sausalito. That's correct, is it? Nod your head. Good. Good. That proves you're in your right mind. You know you were injured. Yeah. You know the cause of your injury. Hit on the head and thrown over the side of your boat. What? Huh? Not the... Oh, dinghy. Well, it's the same thing. All right. Now, you know you're dying. You have no hope of recovery. That's obvious, but nod your head. That's the boy. Now, Nils, on the night of the 18th, around 10 o'clock, after your usual working hours, you rowed somebody out to the yacht Marguerite, in return for which this person gave you a $20 bill. This person is also the person who killed, who inflicted your fatal injuries. It is. Now, the name of that person, if you can possibly speak even in a whisper, so there can be no mistake. Can you hear me? Just say it close to my ear. Yeah? Yes. Yes, I got it.
That's all. Now, I know you don't write, Mills, but make your mark here. Come on, I'll guide your hand. There. Now we're going to take... Mills. Mills. Well, anyway. All right, Maggie. Come on in and join the party. Don't try anything. The light's on you. I'm a better shot than you, and if there's a ruckus, the whole saloon will be down on us. They're all friends of Danny's, too. Stop there. Toss the gun. Okay. What's the matter, Angel? You look kind of scared.
No. Just disappointed, that's all.
Don't give up so easy, sweetheart. I always wanted to take a trip around the world.
We might go on the Marguerite. Together.
Yeah, sailing into the sunset. Sleeping with our deathbed statements under each other's pillows.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I guess it wouldn't work. How much for yours, and what do we do about him?
Dan? I'll take care of that. Throw it in with a deal.
Okay. But I want it in writing. A little statement to the effect that I can keep under my pillow.
Fair enough. Now, all I want from you is a little statement from you to this effect. That you, Marguerite Starbuck, employed Mills Halverson to row you out to the yacht on the night of the 18th, that you there overheard a quarrel between your husband and brother-in-law, and that taking advantage of said brother-in-law's inebriated condition, you sneaked up behind your husband, hit him with a paperweight, and decamped, leaving the murder weapon in Dan's hand. You then started back to shore in the dinghy, and realizing that the only witness who could testify you were aboard that...
All right. All right, I'll sign it.
Okay.
We'll have plenty of time to put in all the legal decorations later.
I'm afraid we won't, baby. You're going to be spending all your available time at Tehachapi and points west.
What are you talking about?
You just made a full confession in front of a witness. You heard it, didn't you, Dan? Every word.
Oh, it's Spike. Honest. An honest man.
Well, I did tell a fib. Now, this is really going to hurt, I'm afraid, Maggie. You see, we didn't actually have any deathbed statement to match yours.
No?
No. Mills Halverson was a good deal too dead to have made a deathbed statement just now. He's been stiff for 12 hours. Period. End of report.
Well, Sam, I'll type this right up because then I'm leaving.
Wait a minute, Effie. I had to do it that way. Don't you understand?
Of course, Sam. I quite understand.
But you object, huh? A cruel, ruthless, murdering, though beautiful woman, foiled by a clever ruse, a great acting performance by the greatest private detective of them all.
Is that all?
You're still leaving.
Yes, Sam, I bagged the pack.
Well, pardon me for having feet.
There's a reason, men. In fact, there are five big reasons why more men every day are turning to Wild Root Cream Oil for well-groomed hair. Wild Root Cream Oil grooms your hair neatly and naturally. Wild Root Cream Oil relieves dryness and removes loose dandruff. Wild Root Cream Oil is non-alcoholic and contains soothing lanolin. Five big reasons why you, too, should join the millions with handsome, well-groomed hair. Why you should step up to your drug or toilet goods counter and ask for Wild Root Cream Oil. Get the big economy bottle and the handy new tube that's easy to pack when you travel and just right for the office or plant. Also, ask your barber for a professional application of Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
Well, here it is, Sam. Goodbye.
Now, wait a minute, Effie. You can't leave like this, not without...
Oh, all right. I'll talk to you while I'm putting my hat on.
Well, can't you at least look at me? After all, you should give me a chance to justify...
Well, apparently you're laboring under an apprehension.
Of course I am.
Oh, boy, am I glad I picked the last in June and the first in July.
What are you talking about?
My vacation.
Vacation? You just had a vacation a few months back.
Well, Sam, that's a year.
Well, if you want to take advantage of a legal technicality.
Now, Sam, don't say goodbye, man.
Well, it's customary, I suppose. It's lucky that some of us keep our nose to the grindstone, our ear to the ground, an eye to the future.
Huh?
Television's just around the corner, you know.
Oh, Sam.
Come here, sweetheart. You look lovely. Come here. Have a wonderful time.
Oh, Sam.
Yeah. Now, go on. You miss your train. Where are you going?
Los Angeles.
Well, just so you don't go to Kanab, Utah.
All right, Sam. You know best. Good night.
Good night, Sierra Sue. town. Who can we get for that part next week?
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, are produced and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff. Lorene Tuttle is Effie. The Adventures of Sam Spade are written for radio by Bob Tallman and Gil Dowd, with musical direction by Lud Gluskin. Join us again next Sunday when author Dashiell Hammett and producer William Spear join forces for another adventure with Sam Spade, brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. This is Dick Joy reminding you to
get Wild Root Cream Oil, Charlie. It keeps your hair in trim. You see, it's non-alcoholic, Charlie. It's made with soothing lanolin. You better get Wild Root Cream Oil, Charlie. Start using it today. You'll find that you will have a tough time, Charlie. Keeping all the gals away. Hiya, Baldy. Get Wild Root right away.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's what the sign out in front of my office says. Pat Novak for hire. It's about the only way to say it. Oh, you can dress it up and tell how many shopping days there are till Christmas. But if you got yourself on the market, you can't waste time talking. You gotta be as brief as a pauper's will. Because down on the waterfront in San Francisco, everybody wants a piece of the cake. And the only easy buck is the one you just spent. Oh, it's a good life. If you work real hard and study a little on the side, you got a trade by the time you get to prison. I rent boats and do a few other odd jobs you can't afford to pick it on. It works out all right if you put your tongue in hock. Because down here, you shouldn't talk. It's like installing a set of drums in a belfry. You make some noise, but it's never the right kind. I found that out a few days ago. Must have been Tuesday or Wednesday night. Anyway, I was sitting in the office reading Time magazine when the door opened. I looked up and had to keep right on going because the guy was so tall he'd have to bend over to see through a transom. And he had a voice deep enough to red out as a bassoon.
Good evening, Mr. Novak.
I'll take your word for it.
You have a small office.
I'm small time. What's on your mind?
My name is Leahy. I want to hire you.
Yeah, sit down. Are you cold?
Yeah.
That overcoat around your neck, you're either cold or a priest.
Oh. I'm a priest, Mr. Novak.
I'm sorry, Father. You got a slow brogue. What do you need?
A few hours of your time. I want you to help a man escape from prison.
Uh-huh. Father, you'll never get along with a bishop.
Mr. Novak, in a curious way, this is an errand of mercy.
Well, this isn't my year for mercy. I'm sorry, Father. Maybe you don't like to hear it that way, but if I got the right fee, it wouldn't be mercy anymore.
When I say it's an errand of mercy, that's what it is. Sometime tonight, a man is going to break out of Alcatraz. If he's allowed to get into town, he may kill somebody.
You want me to stop him?
That's right. And if he doesn't kill anybody, he can still be shot down by the police.
Well, that's the percentage, Father. If he comes off that rock, he knows that. Stop worrying about him.
If you could bring him to me, I know I can talk him into going back.
Tell headquarters they'll do the same thing.
If I did that, I'd break a promise. This is the only thing I can do. Will you help me?
Yeah, I suppose. How do I pick him up? Tread water in the bay till he comes by?
He's due in at Pier 19 sometime tonight. When he comes ashore, bring him to me. I'll be waiting at the ferry building.
Well, suppose he doesn't want to come. Suppose he wants to party. How am I going to get him there?
I don't ask you how to say the beads. If you're any good, you'll get him there.
But you don't want him in sections.
I want him all at once, Mr. Novak. I wouldn't ask you this if it weren't important. But I got to help him. He's one of my boys.
Yeah, sure. What's his name?
Joe Feldman.
Feldman?
Yeah. If I don't worry about the spelling, you don't have to either. He's one of my boys.
Slow down. Nobody's pushing your father.
I don't know when he's due, but I'll be at the ferry building from 8 o'clock on.
Yeah. I only got one worry.
Huh?
Is there really a guy named Father Leahy?
I suppose you'll have to take a chance on that.
Yeah, well, it's a big chance. You come in here with a story anybody can see through like a screen door, and I'm supposed to buy it. You could dig up a collar. What happens if you're a fake?
Just try to guess right.
Suppose I don't.
Then you're in the same spot Pontius Pilate was. Good night, Mr. Novak.
Whoever Joe Feldman was, he had a good friend. Because when Father Leahy walked out of there, I knew he was all right. You could tell without even testing him. The way when you pick up a pool cue, you know right away whether it's any good or not. He stood at the door for a minute, and then he walked out. And you got a funny feeling that he didn't walk into the night, that he was big enough to wrap it around his shoulders and take it with him. I got a last look at him as he turned the corner under a street lamp. He looked even taller now, and you knew if somebody stood him in an oil field, you couldn't tell him from the rest of the derricks. Well, I made a couple of phone calls, and then I closed shop and went down to the end of Pier 19 to wait. The bay looked as dark as a bruised crow. The fog was beginning to drift in over near the piers. By 9 o'clock, you couldn't see a thing. You felt like a guy trying to shave in a bathroom full of steam. I was about 30 feet from the end of the pier when a small boat pulled in and let somebody out. I was sure it was my boy, so I moved behind a shed and waited. The boat pulled away, and the guy started down the dock. I waited until he moved past me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You ought to be glad. How's the rock?
Huh? You lonely, mister?
What do you care?
If you are, buy a beer and talk to the bartender. I'm busy.
All right, you're tough, Feldman. Let's go now.
You got dates for us?
You're going to see Father Leahy. Come on.
Well, are you doubling for Gabriel? Leave me alone, mister. I don't want to go.
Now, look, Junior, if we draw straws, you're going to get the short one.
Oh. That's supposed to be a gun in your pocket?
Well, you get a chance to find out.
That's what I'm going to do, because I have one, too. If it starts to hurt your stomach, back down. Now, where's yours, Mr. Timid? It's a bad night for bluffing, so goodbye.
Yeah, come here.
Go easy, fella. It's a big one.
Well, you can let go easy, then. Come on, drop it. Drop it in the water. Let go. Now, you want to start again?
No. All right, I'll see you, man, Leahy. I gotta make a stop first.
Make it after.
It'll take 5 minutes. Look, mister, if you want to do it the easy way, let me make the stop. You go with me.
All right, 5 minutes, and then you see Father Leahy.
Suit yourself. I doubt if I'll make heaven, but if you want to run interference, it's all right with me. If you need the credits, you need the credits.
Joe Feldman wasn't very friendly. He sat over in the corner of the cab, and he didn't say a thing. He just kept looking at me and waiting, like a guy feeding arsenic to a rich aunt. A few minutes later, the cab pulled up in front of a hotel on Geary Street, and we walked in. One look at that lobby, and you got the idea. The place was about as cozy as an abandoned mine shaft. Over by the wall, there was an old mohair couch, and the legs on it were so warped, pretty soon it was going to look like period furniture. There were a few chairs, and over by the stairs, a faded calendar of a girl in tights holding a jar of mayonnaise and winking, whatever that meant. And there was a broken clock over the desk. But you knew it was all right, because nobody there cared about keeping track of time. It was something you got rid of in a hurry, like a bent quarter. When we went up to the second floor, we walked down a long hall that smelled like an anteroom to a sewer. When Feldman knocked on the door, she opened it right away. The room was full of taboo. She stood leaning there for a minute, a sort of a girl who moves when she stands still. She had blonde hair. She was kind of pretty, except you could see somebody had used her badly, like a dictionary in a stupid family. Feldman seemed to know her.
Hello, Ann.
Well, the harvest hands arrive all at once.
Yeah.
It's good for the crops, but tough on a woman. Come in. Who's your friend?
A missionary, I guess. He grabbed me down by the docks.
Does he talk or just stand there looking healthy?
He growls a little.
Do you really growl?
Come on, hurry up, lady. Your friend's got a date.
I'll bet you bite instead. Don't worry about him. He can go over in a corner and play fifth wheel.
Now, look, he's got 5 minutes. Use them quick.
Yes?
I came up with a message, Ann. The time's been changed. Stay around till 10 o'clock.
All right.
That all?
Yeah, that's all. You want the other 4 minutes?
Let's go.
All right. Open the door.
Yeah.
You didn't open it fast enough.
When Feldman hit me, I wobbled for a minute and went down like the price of winter wheat. If Father Leahy had any loose prayers lying around, now was the time to crate them up and ship them over, because I wasn't going to stay awake long enough to test the varnish. I rolled on the floor a couple of times, and then I took a rain check on the next couple of hours. When I woke up, it was like buying a new Nash and then finding out you can't drive. Joe Feldman was lying next to me with his throat cut like a pound of rib roast. His head was over to one side and his body was twisted over the other way as if he couldn't make up his mind which direction to die in. I got up and rolled him on his back. He was grinning like a Pullman porter at the end of the line and his mouth was half open as if he expected you to drop in a suggestion on your way by. I noticed right then how thin and small he was. About as fat as a shadow and tall enough to scrape his head on a lampshade. Well, there wasn't anything I could do but wish him luck. So I called the check stand at the ferry building and had them page Father Leahy. About 2 minutes later, he answered.
Hello, Father Leahy.
This is Novak, Father.
Yes?
Call in the outfield. Your boy's dead.
I see. What happened?
Somebody didn't like him lots. I wasn't around for the main event.
Where are you, on the pier?
No, I'm in some cave up on Geary Street. He wanted to come by here first. Father, who's Ann?
I don't know.
Has Feldman got a girlfriend?
He's got two sisters, I think. One of them's named Ann.
A tall blonde with lots of speed?
That's your definition, but it'll probably do.
She was around for a while, in case you ever want to check.
What are you going to do?
Get on the back stairs and pretend I never heard of Joe Feldman.
I'm sorry, Mr. Novak. I'm sorry it worked out that way.
So am I, Father. If you liked him, I'm sorry. He may have been a nice little guy.
Huh?
Oh, I could do without him, but if you like it, I'll say he was a good little guy.
How little?
I don't know. We could start a picket fence with him. Why?
Because you've got the wrong man, Mr. Novak.
Huh?
If he's under 6 feet, you've got the wrong man. Whoever you've got up there isn't Joe Feldman.
Well, he's happy about it now, Father.
Whoever he is, I'm sorry.
It's the percentage.
Why the percentage? If it isn't Joe Feldman, why?
That's the waterfront, Father. If your name's Joe Nobody, you still can't do better than 8-5. At least Joe Feldman was smart. If you're going to get your throat cut, it's a good time to send in a substitute. As soon as Father Leahy hung up, I knew hanging around that hotel was going to be a waste of time, like sending mash notes to a bearded lady. If I couldn't prove the guy was alive, they were going to charge extra down at the desk. And if Hellman down at Homicide ever found out I brought the guy up here, I'd have about as much chance as a bottle of scotch at a cocktail party. So I picked up my hat and started for the door. I looked at him once more, but he wasn't going to say goodbye, so I started out.
Boo.
Oh. Hello, Hellman.
Expecting me, Novak?
No, I'd have rolled him first.
Yeah. Invite me in.
Crash the party, Hellman. You'll be more at home.
All right. He sure looks lazy. Who is he?
He's supposed to be Joe Feldman.
But Feldman let him do the hard work. They must be good friends.
You better check. I don't know the guy.
Yeah, help me roll him over.
Okay. There. Here. Here's his wallet.
You let me have it.
You're going to break your fingernails.
Give it here.
All right.
Yeah. No money in here.
You going to drop the case?
Here's his card, Mike Greeley. Didn't he like you either?
You're wearing out the rug, Hellman. I don't know the guy.
You brought him up. I checked at the desk.
Well, check on who left then. I brought him up here on a phony leave.
Why?
Because I was hired to tow him around. He liked the room, so we dropped by.
And he cut himself shaven?
I wasn't around. There was a girl here for the handshakes.
What kind of girl?
I don't know, Hellman. How many kinds are there? Her name was Ann. She had a fast pulse. That's all I know.
You must know more than that. If you don't, you'll never get a lawyer.
I won't need one.
You'll save money at least, because you've got a real hole this time, Novak. We get a phone tip and find you in the murder room.
You got half a story, Hellman.
I know, but I'll get the other half. Until then, you're under technical arrest. It's practically the real thing.
You got a technical head, Hellman. I wouldn't tip myself off.
Somebody else would. Walk around, Novak, and tire yourself out. Because you'll wind up sitting down. In the meantime, I'll have you tailed.
Your men couldn't follow a moose through a revolving door. Now, look, Hellman, I'm going to double back. This guy's a phony lead. I was supposed to meet a guy named Joe Feldman, but he never showed up.
He didn't?
No.
I got a dead copper to prove he did. Your boy, Joe Feldman, killed a sergeant named Grubb at the Gold Rush Club a half hour ago. You better start that walk, Novak.
Well, there are two kind of raps you can't ever beat. Cheating a woman with kids and killing a copper. So I knew Joe Feldman could put in for reservations right away. And I knew Hellman would stay with him like a February cold. He'd stay with the whole thing, and I'd have a real tough time explaining. I couldn't explain it to myself. What about the message up in that room? Why did the little guy tell Ann to stay until 10 o'clock? Why did he get off at Pier 19 instead of Joe Feldman? Once he got there, what was Feldman doing at the Gold Rush Club, and why did they spot him so fast? Well, it pointed to one thing, a police tip-off, but that's as far as I could go. On the way down, I stopped at the desk, and I asked the clerk to see the register. He pushed it over toward me. It was a dirty brown thing that looked like an old tortilla somebody had left behind. It didn't do any good. The registration was a phony. Well, I had to do something in a hurry, so I looked up the only honest guy I know, an ex-doctor and a boozer by the name of Jocko Madigan. He's a good man, and he used to be a smart one, too. And still he started chasing a jigger of beer with a glass of whiskey. I finally found him in the Pied Piper room arguing with somebody about the words to Annie Laurie.
Ah, Patsy, a drink for Mr. Novak. Something cheap but impressive.
Oh, stop it, will you, Jocko? Are you going to be drunk all your life?
Yes, it's only a matter of willpower, Patsy. I'm probably the only man in the world who intends to carry a hangover into eternity.
Well, stop long enough to give me a hand, will you? I'm in trouble.
Of course you're in trouble. You'll always be in trouble because you can't recognize it, Patsy.
You're fuzzy, Jocko.
You have the social outlook of a bull with a hot foot, and there's no hope for you, because if from time to time a moral feeling does sweep over you, you mistake it for influenza and go to bed.
All right, all right.
Oh, you try hard enough. You go through the motions, Patsy, but you never get anywhere. You go stumbling through life doing a tight wire act on a rubber band. You're always in the middle.
Will you listen to me?
It's because there's no variety in your life. You won't allow it. You're a broken-down banjo, not a very good instrument to begin with. And to make matters worse, you allow everybody to come along and pluck the same string.
All right. Are you all through now, Jocko?
Yes, you sound angry. I think you have a bad disposition, too. What kind of trouble?
Well, I tried to help some guy out of prison tonight.
You got drunk and thought you were the parole board?
No, I did it for a good guy, a priest named Leahy.
Yes?
The guy was already out, and Father Leahy was trying to hurt him back without getting shot. But this guy Feldman didn't want to play.
Another drink will clear this up for me.
I picked up the wrong guy. I took him to a Geary Street hotel. I napped a while, and they cut him up like a piece of parsley.
Sounds like a gruesome hotel.
The dead guy's name is Mike Greeley. I don't even know who he is.
Well, this is no time to start building a friendship anyway. Who is in the room?
Some girl. She may be Feldman's sister.
Would she kill a man?
Well, if she did, he'd be crushed to death. No, I'm sure somebody else came in that room.
You better talk to Feldman.
Well, he's a hard man to reach. A sergeant almost made it tonight. Feldman shot his way out of the Gold Rush Club.
That's one way to get out of a nightclub.
Well, Hellman steamed up, so you got to help me, Jocko.
You'd better look up Father Leahy. You'll probably be electrocuted, and if you are, he may have some drag.
I want you to go down to the Chronicle Morgue and pull the clips on Joe Feldman, will you? Get everything you can, and then hit the horse parlors. Find out what they know about him, huh?
Maybe he's a heavy drinker. I'll check the bars.
Jocko, wake up and get on there. If I don't pace Hellman on this thing, I'll be a dead pigeon. What am I supposed to do?
I don't know. You might start cooing. Good night, lover.
Well, as soon as I left Jocko, I went down to the Gold Rush Club on O'Farrell Street. It was a little nightclub where they charge 80 cents for a drink of whiskey that'd kill a redwood. The floor show was just as bad, and the headliner was an Oriental dancer whose only talent was a zipper. I sat at the bar, and I tried to pry some talk loose, but they liked the boss. I finally got a hold of a fat waitress who should have been wearing a harness instead of slacks. She told me a little. The owner was a guy named Charlie Giffen. He used to make book with Joe Feldman.
She told me that Joe's sister worked at the Gold Rush Club for a while, but she got sick a few months ago and quit. I asked the girl if tonight's shooting was a police plant. She didn't know, but she said that Feldman had been in to see Giffen tonight, and on his way out, he ran into trouble. I gave her $5, and she looked hurt as if somebody had given her a plow for Christmas. She showed me where Giffen's office was, and I walked back there. Giffen wasn't there, but the taboo was.
Do you have the right door, Mr. Novak?
You seem to be in all of them.
Do you mind if I lean in the doorway?
No, but I'll bet you need shoulder pads by this time. Where's Charlie Giffen?
Why?
I want to ask him about Joe Feldman.
Ask me. I'm his sister.
I'll ask you about Mike Greeley. Who killed him?
I don't know. Is he dead?
Yeah, he couldn't stand the bleeding.
He was all right when I left.
What were you doing up there?
Waiting for Joe. My sister and I were going to meet him up there. Relax, Mr. Novak. Relax for me.
No, when people relax for you, they do it on the floor. I was out long enough for homicide to catch up. They want me for Mike Greeley, but I'm going to send them you or Joe.
You're forgetting my sister Norma.
Should I?
For most things, yes. But she was up in that room tonight after me.
I'll ask her.
Ask her about the money, too.
Well, you're out in front of me on that.
You can see me better that way. Joe had a lot of money on him tonight. With the police out, he wouldn't carry it with him. By now, the money's gone, so's Norma.
Oh.
Do you know where it is?
No.
Well... You growl, and you bite, and you lie. You must have a full day. Sit down, relax.
I want to see Giffen.
He won't be back tonight. Now lean back. That's it, Patsy.
You really want that money.
I can split a motive.
Can you split it 90-10? If you can't, you better get your breath back.
I won't need it. I don't want to talk anymore. Come here and make me stop. Over close.
If I get any closer, I'll be on the other side of you.
Yes. Patsy. You ought to get time and a half, darling.
Hello, Ann. Thought you were coming in to curl up with a good book.
Mr. Novak came by full of questions. This is Charlie Giffen, Patsy.
I got some questions for you, too, Giffen.
Well, ask him down the bore of this gun. Over by the desk, Novak.
Did you lose that knife, Giffen?
By the desk. That's it. Where's the money, Novak?
I gave her the last report.
Where's the money? Joe gave it to somebody.
Try the Red Cross, mister.
You got a tender face, Novak. Now get out of this club before I slap on a cover charge.
Oh, I was getting sick of tonight. In 3 hours, I'd seen more service than a mixmaster in a cooking school. When I left the Gold Rush Club, I dropped by headquarters. Hellman had nothing to show but his badge. They had a dragnet around the city for Joe Feldman, and they'd lined up the record on the dead guy in the hotel. He'd been a friend of Joe's before his trip to Alcatraz. There wasn't much I could do. If homicide couldn't find Joe, I couldn't find him. So I looked up Norma Feldman in the phone book. She had an apartment out on the avenues, but when I called, there was no answer, so I tagged by my apartment to see if Jocko had left a message. When I opened the door, Norma was there, and she had a gun to keep her company.
Come in, Mr. Novak.
Yeah?
I came up here to kill you.
Well, if you're Norma, the rest of the family's ahead of you.
What's happened to my brother?
I don't know.
Please, what's happened to him, Mr. Novak?
Well, if he killed a cop, he's hiding out.
I know he didn't mean to do that, Mr. Novak. Joe's not that way. Somebody told the police he was going to be there. That's why I came up here to see you.
Oh, put down the gun, huh? You can't shoot through the tears.
Mr. Novak, if you know where he is, tell me. Make him give himself up. Make him stop hiding like a small, frightened animal.
You look big to that copper.
Please. Please find him. You've got to.
Yeah.
Hello, this is Jocko.
Yeah.
You sound ruffled.
Joe Feldman's sister just walked in to kill me.
Don't argue. It's the best offer you've had.
What'd you find out?
Feldman has two sisters.
I know. They both go to pieces.
The Gold Rush Club is owned by Charlie Giffen. He owed Joe Feldman $2,000, and the horse people say Joe collected it tonight.
Well, that fits in, Jocko. Everybody in town's after that dough.
They'll have to look some more.
Hmm?
I'm out on Arguello Boulevard. Homicide just fished Joe Feldman out of the gutter.
If homicide finished second, he was a lucky guy. He didn't have the dough on him?
No.
Well, he stashed it somewhere.
Then he left it with a woman.
Yeah?
Because he's got a woman's compact in his pocket. You better hit the sister's place.
How do we know he got it there?
A woman's compact? If he didn't get it there, Alcatraz is getting too social.
Well, the minute Jocko hung up, things began to fall into place. But I knew the last piece was going to pinch somebody hard.
If the Feldman blood was going to turn bad, Father Leahy was a good man to send in, so I called him. He was out, but I left word for him to get out to Norma Feldman's apartment. Norma and I left, and on the way, we picked up Hellman. When we got out to her place and started up the stairs, we could hear people moving above. There was no point in trying to keep quiet, because Hellman was creeping up the stairs like a stallion with a broken leg. Yeah, if you got a bomb, touch it off too, huh? I'll open it, Hellman.
Hello, Novak.
Did you find the dough, Giffen?
You mean my stolen dough? Yeah. Come on, Ann.
No, you and Ann better wait. This is Hellman from Homicide.
We're leaving. You better move, Novak.
Not until you settle a murder rap. Can you pay it off that fast?
I can do it on the way to the door.
Oh, wait a minute. Point the gun at Hellman. He's official.
I can tag you both, so move away. You too, Norma. Ann and I are leaving.
Look, Giffen, Homicide gobbles up nightclub big shots like you.
You're nothing to me, copper. Move away.
You got the hammer. Use it and come on through.
All right, I will, copper. Hey,
yeah, you need a refill, Giffen.
That's right, darling. Hand him your gun.
Ann, you couldn't have done that. You couldn't have taken him out.
All right, so they fell out. You better take him for murder, Hellman.
You little bum. That leaves you all the money.
I can spend it, darling.
Well, you better do it fast, then.
Grab him, Hellman.
Yeah, I got him.
You can fucking for both murders. My Greeley and my brother. I'll testify and I'll ride there in a cab on your dough, Giffen.
Yeah. Are you going to pose or take me, Hellman?
If you're anxious.
Sorry about you, Norma. You get nothing out of this, but that's better than I got. Goodbye, Ann. Lots of luck.
Thank you, darling.
You know what kind. I hope you're rot. Come on, Hellman.
I'm ashamed of you, Ann.
Leave me alone, Norma.
I'm ashamed of you, Ann. What you did to Joe, I'm ashamed of you.
Leave me alone, Norma. I'm sick, you know that. I didn't know how it was going
to
work out.
Poor Joe was trying to help you when you got greedy. He was trying to help you. That's the only reason he came out, and you let this happen.
I told you I didn't know how it was going to end. I thought they'd get him and take him back again.
There's no good in you, Ann. They couldn't find good in you anywhere. You let that happen to Joe. You stood by and watched him walk into something like that.
All right, I stood by. What can we do about it now except weep, and that won't help him.
But hating you will. That'll help Joe a little. I'm here at least to hate you for the short time left.
Please, Norma.
Giffen told you to spend it fast. Well, you better spend it fast. Ask him at the hospital if that isn't so.
What do you mean?
Ask him out there what you've got. They told. You ask him what you've got. Ask him what's tearing you to pieces. Ask him, they'll tell you. They'll tell you you've got cancer.
Norma, please.
They'll tell you cancer. Ask him, they'll tell you you're full of it. Now spend your money. Spend your money and see that it lasts as long as you do.
Goodbye, girls.
Hello, Mr. Novak.
Did you miss much, Father?
No.
Feldman luck is running kind of bad tonight.
It does for some people, I guess. All they get is unhappiness. They wear it the same way you'd wear a sports coat, only they never seem to get a new one. I'm sorry about tonight, Mr. Novak. I'm sorry it's not a smoother world.
Yeah. But if it were, you'd be out of a job, Father. See you later. If you get a bad first break, you never run the table. That's what happened to Joe Feldman. Charlie Giffen owed him dough and wouldn't pay up. But Joe didn't care until Norma showed up and told him how sick Ann was, so he decided to collect from Giffen and divide the dough between the girls. Father Leahy couldn't stop him. All he could do was try and make it work out. Joe was going to get the dough and meet the girls in that hotel room, but he changed his timetable and sent Mike Greeley up to tell the girls. Giffen showed up there and figured that Mike had tumbled to a double cross, so he killed him. Anne engineered the double cross, but she didn't mean to go that far. She wanted all the dough and tipped off Giffen. He was supposed to turn the dough over to her and then have the police pick up Joe, but Joe got there early. He took the dough away from Giffen and shot the copper on the way out. Giffen followed Joe and killed him out in Arguello, but the dough was gone. He finally tumbled to Norma's place, and that's how her apartment filled up so fast. Well, Hellman asked only one question. What did I get out of all this? Nothing. Father Leahy offered me $50, but I didn't want it. Jocko was with me, and he offered to give it to charity. I guess he did, because where Jocko spent it, the drinks aren't worth money.
Pat Novak for Hire was previously released by ABC, the American Broadcasting Company, for listeners in the United States, and rebroadcast for our men and women overseas. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
Hunters, the detective whose ability at solving crime is unequaled in the history of detective fiction, Nick Carter, Master Detective. Tonight's curious adventure,
Records of Death, for Nick Carter and the Mystery of the Unclaimed Box.
The fact of the matter is, Mr. Carter, that I've quite accidentally stumbled on a terrible crime. Or, to be more correct, I've stumbled on evidence that a terrible crime has been committed.
But even so, Mr. Field, why do you come to me with it? That sort of thing should be reported to the police.
Mr. Carter, what police would I report it to?
Where was the murder committed?
I don't know.
Well, how can you know that a murder's been done if you don't know where it was done?
Well, that's what makes this particular crime different from any other. Somewhere, sometime, a murder's been committed. Yet I don't know when or where. As a matter of fact, I doubt if anyone in the world knows of it, except those who did it, and me.
And how do you happen to know all this?
Because the victim, a young and beautiful girl, has told me so in her own words. I have the knowledge from her own lips.
Oh, and you've seen and talked to her?
Well, here's the story, Mr. Carter. About a month ago, I attended one of the sales of unclaimed packages that the Express Company holds twice a year. Among other things I bought was a box about one-third the size of a steamer trunk. It contained some miscellaneous articles of clothing and 10 phonograph records.
Phonograph records, huh? Regular professional records?
No, Mr. Carter. They were small record blanks you buy when you make home recordings for yourself. I immediately played the records, and since then I've played them so often, I almost know them by heart.
And you learn about this crime from those records?
Yes.
Mr. Field, you want to arouse my curiosity. You certainly succeeded. When can I hear these records?
Immediately, Mr. Carter. I have them in my room. If you'll go there with me, we can listen to them at once.
Splendid. You mind if I take my assistant, Patsy Bowen, with me?
Of course not.
Then as soon as she's ready, we'll go. Patsy!
Yes, Nick?
Get your hat. We're leaving at once to listen to a murder.
This is the box, Mr. Carter.
Beautiful, isn't it? Now, Mr. Field, before we go further, there are a few things I should like to know. How long ago did you buy this box at the auction?
A little over a month ago.
Mm-hmm. And the Express Company must have had it for about a year or so. Another thing, were there any wrappings on the box when you bought it?
Yes, it was well wrapped in heavy burlap.
You have those wrappings now?
I'm sorry to say I don't. By the time I realized that the wrappings might have furnished a clue to the mystery, they'd been burned in the incinerator.
Too bad. Well, do you have any chance, whatever, recall the name and address to which the box was consigned?
Fortunately, I do. It was addressed to an Alex Delanois in New York City. But I've searched every city directory, every telephone book, every place where names are listed, and I can find no such name anywhere. There was no street address, and the rest of the label, as I remember it, was practically obliterated.
I see. All right, Mr. Field, let's listen to the records.
And gladly. I'm very anxious to get your opinion of them.
Are they in any kind of order?
After hearing them over and over as I've done, I believe that I've finally arranged them in their proper order.
I see.
They're so peculiar, I can hardly wait to see if you can tell me the answer. Here's the first one.
I have a terrible story to tell. But even while I try to tell it, I'm afraid that you who may listen to this will not believe me. But I beg you, if justice means anything to you, believe me and avenge me. I shall rest easier in my grave if I know that those who hope to profit by my death have been deprived of the fortune they plan to get by killing me. I am very rich, but I am not rich enough to avoid the fate that is in store for me.
She sounds as if she meant it, doesn't she?
I thought he was coming in, but he went away. I've tried several times to escape, but I've failed each time. I wish I could tell you where I am, but I can't, because I was drugged when they brought me here. Oh, I forgot to say, my name is Nancy Deering, and I'm 22 years old. You who listen to this will recognize the name at once, of course. I only hope they don't murder me until I can...
Is that the end of it?
Not quite.
He almost caught me that time, but now he's left me alone again. Maybe I can...
That's all. Apparently, he came back before she expected him.
Well, she certainly had plenty of trouble getting a story onto the records, didn't she?
Yes. She was interrupted many times, generally in the wrong places.
Well, I imagine no trouble is too great if you're really desperate.
What a terrible feeling it must be to expect to be killed any minute.
Here's the second record, if you're ready.
Okay, Phil.
I don't know where I left off with my story last time. I dare not play it back. If they should ever hear what I'm trying to do, they'd take the machine away from me. Then I'd be completely lost. I feel that my end is coming very soon now. They may carry out their plans to... In the gloaming, oh, my darling, when the lights are soft and low, and the flickering. I think he's gone now. I'm sure Ralph was listening at the door, but the singing apparently convinced him I was listening to the radio. When the time comes, I know it will be Ralph who kills me. Olive will undoubtedly help him, but Ralph is the leader. I found that out the other day when they tried to get me to sign the papers which will give them possession of my fortune. I shall never sign but that... When the light...
The rest of the record is that song. They did her best for her story on those records.
Too bad she didn't succeed better.
Well, she managed to get most of her story on the records one way or another. The only thing she really missed out on was telling us more about herself than just her name.
Probably never occurred to her that the records might travel thousands of miles before someone would hear them.
Yeah, here's the third record.
Last night, somebody searched my rooms while I was in bed. Maybe they suspect that I'm making these records. Although I'm very careful, I play the radio all the time, so they'll be used to hearing the noise. Ralph told me yesterday he was sure I was going crazy. Maybe I...
Nancy, Olive asked me to tell you that.
And that ends that.
Whose voice do you suppose that was there at the end?
I suspect it was Ralph's.
It's amazing how much of the scene she recreates this way without really saying anything definite. You can feel the tension and the suspense right along with her.
Yes. On the fourth record, she was able to get part of the visit that Ralph paid her one day. She must have known he was coming and prepared for it by putting the record blank on the machine in advance. Then, when she heard him at the door, she probably turned it on. Got this.
Well, put it on quickly, Mr. Field. Here
you are, Miss Bowen.
Well, my beautiful young half-sister, have you decided to sign over your fortune to me?
I told you long ago I'd never do that.
If you sign, we'll set you free, just as we promised.
You don't fool me, Ralph. The minute I sign my name to that paper you have there, you'll kill me. You know that as well as I do. You set me free. That's funny.
You don't know when you're well off, Nancy. If you did, you'd sign and go free.
You don't think I'm a fool, Ralph.
I do. And I also think it won't be long before you wish you had signed.
Oh, I wish this were all over. I wonder how they'll kill me. Ralph would prefer to strangle me, I'm sure, with those great hairy hands of his. As for Olive, yes, she'd use poison on the boot.
That's all there is on that one.
It's a pity she couldn't have put more on each record than she did. She really used only a small portion of each blind.
Yes, Betsy, but she had trouble enough to get even that much on them, the way they watched her.
Nick, where could she get the blank records in the first place? They certainly wouldn't have let her have them knowingly.
If I were to make a guess, Betsy, I'd say that when they took her to the place where she was kept prisoner, they probably took along her clothes and some of her furnishings. Mm-hmm. And among them, probably, was this radio phonograph. Perhaps she specially asked for it because she loved music or something, and the record blanks were probably the machine along with the other records.
That could be. How about the fifth record, Mr. Field?
I've never been able to make much out of this one. Maybe you'll have better luck.
You mean it's not like the others?
Quite different. Here, I'll start it near the end. The whole first part is a scratch and nothing else.
What's the idea of locking herself? Nancy.
Where is she?
Nancy, come on out here.
She's hiding. Drag her out.
I'll find her.
Clear, that perfectly clear to me. Nan locked her door and started the record. For some reason, she waited before saying anything. Then Ralph and Olive came, found the door locked, and, being suspicious, broke it down. Nancy hid, and they dragged her out. There was an argument about something that I didn't get. Nancy grabbed Ralph's pistol and took a quick shot at him, but she missed. Before she could pull the trigger again, he took the gun away from her.
Good grief, Mr. Carter. It's clear enough when you tell it. Well, here's the sixth one.
I must hurry. The time is very short. I may be interrupted any minute. I'm seldom left alone anymore. They seem to be afraid of what I'll do if I'm left alone. I wonder that they haven't killed me before this. I wonder if they...
There's nothing but scratch for quite a bit here, but she starts again.
Olive came in. I had to stop. Now she's gone for a few minutes at least. Yesterday, I wrote a letter to my father, and I threw it out the window, hoping someone would find it and mail it. But Ralph found it and brought it back to me and laughed at me. I keep asking him for news of my father, but he'll tell me nothing. If Father only knew where I am, he'd rescue me. Maybe if I can jump...
And that's the end of that.
Well, we didn't get much out of it.
I wonder where Father comes into this.
You'll see before we're through. And this seventh record is more interesting, because it records a complete conversation between Nancy and Ralph.
Good. Let's hear it.
Well, my dear Nancy, how are you today?
If you had your way, I'd be dead.
Why don't you kill yourself and save us the trouble?
You mean save you from having a murder on your conscience? You have such a thing?
Murder? Very ugly word, Nancy.
You're murdering me inch by inch every day that I stay here.
Well, I don't object to doing it that way, if I can.
Please,
if you ever throw anything at me like that again, I'll tie you up so you won't be able to move out of your chair.
Ralph, if you really want me to sign those papers for you, just let me go to my father. If you do, I'll sign anything you ask.
That's out of the question, Anne. But if you sign, we'll see that your father finds you soon enough. And it's only because I'm your half-brother that I offer you this.
You sneak in my house!
I'll shoot without you.
No! Wait!
Next time I'll kill you. If you weren't my half-sister, I'd do it right now. And I'd enjoy doing it. So don't tempt me too far. I might forget that your mother and mine were the same.
Please. Ralph. Would you get me a glass of water?
Yeah.
Please, Aunt. Please.
Well. All right. But no tricks or I'll lose.
Oh, gosh, I wish we could have had more of that.
Yes. We might have learned something really important.
You will. Nancy knew the record was near the end, and that glass of water was merely an excuse to get Ralph out of the room while she put on a new one.
Good for her. She's a clever girl.
Oh, what a terrible ordeal she went through. Never knowing from one day to the next whether it was her last.
Quiet, Patsy, please.
Thank you. You were gone quite a long time.
I met Olive in the hall. She reminded me to tell you, we've decided that unless you do as we want you to, you have just one more day to live. Just one.
Do you think that frightens me? I'll almost welcome death. Because I know it's the only way I'll ever get away from you two. I'm firmly convinced you'll never succeed in getting possession of my fortune.
Of course we'll get it. No doubt about that.
I don't think you will.
No?
No. That is, you won't get it unless you're planning on murdering my father, too. After you forged a new will for him to leave behind him.
Smart, aren't you? Guessed it the first time.
No. No, you wouldn't. You couldn't.
No, why not? He's not my father. And we want his fortune for ourselves.
I can't believe such inhuman creatures as you two really exist.
Our mother bore a strange lot of children, didn't she? On one hand, we have you, my saintly Nancy. And on the other hand, we have the twins, Olivet and me, who are anything but saintly. Yes, life is very strange sometimes.
Get out! Get out of me, I've got to die with you!
That's an excellent idea, Nan. I'll be gone for about 15 minutes. If you're wise, you won't be alive when I return. Goodbye. I hope forever.
You heard what he said. It was the best evidence I could get. Ralph really made a full confession without knowing that every word he said was being preserved for you to hear. My father. Why must he die? Oh, I beg you. Whoever you are, hear these words. If you can do anything to avenge our death, in heaven's name, do it. I go to my death believing that through you I shall have my revenge at last. Oh, please don't fail me. I see the records coming to an end. Good night. Pray for me. Good God. If you didn't know she was in deadly earnest, you'd almost think she was putting on an act.
I still feel terribly moved when I hear that record. She never had a chance, really.
Well, let's hear the next one. That's the ninth, isn't it?
Number nine is almost a blank. Here it is.
They almost caught me that time. They mustn't do that because they might find the records I've already made and destroy them. They're both coming back in a few minutes, but maybe I can... Isn't that all there is on that one?
That's all. That's the end of the record.
There's one more, isn't it?
Yes. And number ten. The first two-thirds of it's blank. It starts here.
Stand back, both of you.
What do you see?
I'm armed.
You know I can shoot straight. I'll kill the first one of you to move.
Confound your ass, that's my gun. Where did you get it?
Olive gave it to me so I could defend myself. That's a lie, and you know it.
Wait a minute!
You little son!
No.
I waited much too long.
No.
This time you have. Well, that takes care of you. Olive.
Yes. Yeah. What happened?
The bullet just grazed your temple. Must have stunned you momentarily.
Oh. Is Nancy dead?
Yes. She's dead.
What do we do with the body? The old man will be here in a couple of hours, and we don't want to be caught.
And that's the end of the last record.
Poor Nancy. She certainly got a tough break.
I truly believe that's the most remarkably told tragedy in history.
Oh, Mr. Carter, have you got any ideas?
I have, but I'm not ready to talk about them yet.
Well, what's the next step now, Nick?
Well, first of all, Patsy, I want to examine the other contents of the box thoroughly. I can look them over more intelligently now that I've heard the records. Then I want to play those records over and over until I know them by heart.
And then?
Then I expect to be able to give you the answer to the problem. Got a sandwich in your pocket, Patsy?
Oh, Nick, I thought you'd never finish listening to those records.
Well, I wanted to be sure I didn't miss anything anyway. And I believe I've learned everything those records could tell me.
You mean you really found some clues, Nick?
Yes, indeed, Patsy. Several clues marked out for us very plainly.
Oh, that's wonderful.
But first, I want to go over that list we made of the other things that were in that box addressed to Alex Delanois.
Of course, Nick. Let me see now. Yes, here it is. Opera cloak with label Felix and Company, Toronto. And a beautiful and expensive thing it was, too.
Hmm?
Silk slip with the name Olivette Dupre pinned on it. Wish I could wear silk like that.
That's it.
A silk slip with the name Nancy Deering pinned to it. A New Testament with the name Evangeline Dupre on the flyleaf. Several rings, all very valuable. A real pearl necklace. And some beautiful and very expensive lace. Also, of course, a bloodstained nightdress, which must have been the one that Nancy was murdered in.
And the three snapshots, of course.
Oh, yes. One with the name Olivette on the back. One with the name Ralph, and one with the name Evangeline Dupre Deering.
Whoever packed that box knew exactly what he was doing, Patsy. All ties together beautifully. He or she has given us all the clues he could to the people concerned in the affair.
Evangeline Dupre Deering must have been the mother.
Yes. She had two children, twins, Ralph and Olivette by her first marriage. Then she married Nancy's father, a man named Deering.
But that doesn't get as much nearer a solution, Nick.
No, but it does, Patsy. Did you notice that all the voices we heard on the records were American?
Well, yes, I guess they were.
And yet the names are mostly French, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Now, where do we find a combination like that around here?
Why, in Canada, I suppose.
Exactly. And the label on the opera cloak says Toronto, which confirms the Canada idea perfectly.
You mean that the Deerings lived in Toronto?
Well, certainly quite logical to assume that the scene of the murder is Canada, and very possibly in the vicinity of Toronto. Well, we start there anyway. Maybe the Toronto police can help us.
But, Nick, even if you're right, it doesn't mean that the police would know anything about the murder. It was all done so secretly.
You're overlooking one thing, Patsy.
Yeah? Well, what is it?
The family from which these people came was a rich family. Very rich indeed, if we may guess from the beautiful laces and from the jewelry and other things packed in the box.
Mm-hmm.
And remember also that Nancy's father was probably killed, too. Now, I can't believe that the head of a rich and probably well-known family could disappear without anyone knowing it.
You mean you think the police will know that something happened to him about a year ago, even if they don't think that there's anything wrong about it?
Exactly. So pack your bag, Patsy, and order a taxi to take us to the airport. We're flying to Toronto immediately.
I'm very happy to welcome you back to Toronto, Mr. Carter. It's been many years since you've been up here to see us.
Well, thanks very much, Chief. Now, you mind if I ask you a few questions?
Of course not. Go right ahead.
Did you get a letter about a year ago telling that a murder had been done? And that if you wanted proof, you should claim an express box sent to New York City in the name of Alex Delanois?
Wait a minute. By George, Carter, we did get just such a letter. But we thought it was the work of a crank and destroyed it. Do you mean it was true?
I have every reason to believe it was. Now another question. Would you know anything about a girl named Nancy Deering, or about her father?
For heaven's sake, Carter, what do you know about the Deering family?
You answer my question first, I'll answer yours. What about the Deering?
The father, Charles Deering, was the younger son of an English nobleman.
Mm-hmm.
He was immensely rich, had a house here in town, a country place called Deering Hall. He married a woman with two children, twins, I believe. And she died when his daughter Nancy was born.
Ah.
He was always prominent in local affairs up to about a year ago when he's said to have disappeared. Hasn't been seen since. I understand he started for Deering Hall, but never arrived there, according to his two stepchildren.
What about his daughter, Nancy?
Nancy was brought up by relatives in Montreal. Few people here know her at all. But as I remember it, she was supposed to have disappeared just before her father did. Although I now understand that she was at Deering Hall with her half-brother and sister all the time.
You say Nancy didn't disappear after all?
I know. As a matter of fact, she was here in Toronto this past week. She believes her father is dead, so she's applied for letters of administration for the estate.
I thought so.
You did? What do you know about it?
Enough to know that this girl who calls herself Nancy Deering isn't Nancy Deering at all. She's an imposter whom the stepchildren have brought in to impersonate her. Chief, we gotta get out to Deering Hall at once.
Leading into the Deering estate turns off somewhere right in here, Carter. I'm not quite sure.
Well, look, Chief. There's a man standing in the road up ahead.
Oh, so there is.
And he's motioning to us to stop.
He looks almost like a dwarf, doesn't he?
Certainly a queer-looking individual.
If there helps you, I'll go into the oil.
Yes, we are. Why?
Could you take me back there? I have walked so far, I'm tired out.
Oh, of course. Climb in.
Well... You are a policeman, no?
Yes, I am.
Oh, then you can help me. And I need help so very much.
What seems to be the trouble?
My name is Alex Delanois. I am the...
Alex Delanois?
Oh, yes, you know me.
You once sat a box packed with records and other things in New York City addressed to yourself?
Oh, but yes, you have seen it.
Yes, that's why we're here. Tell me, how did you ever happen
yes,
to...
Yes, I will tell you everything. I was the caretaker at the hall. Miss Deering let me stay in one of the old tower rooms because I am, as you see, a cripple. Sometimes I do not get out of bed for days at a time. About a year ago, the two stepchildren of those so very wicked devils came to the hall. They brought a girl who was kept a prisoner in one of the bedrooms.
Alex, isn't that the hall road to the hall just ahead there?
No, but yes, the hall is about a half a mile in off this road.
Go on with your story, Alex.
Yeah, the girl was so carefully guarded by those two, I could not get to her room. I could not help her. I am a cripple.
No, you did what you could, Alex. You being there helped her, I know.
How did you manage to get the things packed in the box?
After they killed Nancy, poor enfant, they did not guard their room so carefully. I got in, I took the records and the other things and packed them in the box. A fisherman I know up by the lake sent the box by express for me. I wrote to the police in Toronto and in New York and told them what had happened and asked them to claim this box. But I am afraid they did not do it.
No, we didn't. We thought the letter was just a hoax. What about Nancy's father?
The day after Nancy was killed, he came here and they tried to kill him too.
Tried to? You mean they didn't succeed?
No, not quite. They hit him on the head with a pistol and threw him into the lake from the high cliff. Ah, but I saw them do it, and I rescued him. I took him to my room and nursed him myself until he could get a doctor.
Well, how is he now?
Well, he's about well now, I think.
There's the house right ahead, Nick. Drive right up to the door, Chief. I'll go ahead. You keep in the background in case they know you.
Okay, Carter. Well, I'll be right behind you.
Alex, you and Patsy stay here in the car.
Oh, but of course.
Sure, Nick.
Yes? What is it, please?
Please tell Miss Deering that we've come to take some affidavits concerning her application as administratrix for the estate.
Yes, sir. Well, come in, please. I'll announce you.
It's your turn now, Chief. I'll stand here one side of the door, just in case.
I can handle them, Carter.
Maybe, but they're going to be... Quiet. Here they come.
Well, gentlemen, what can we
do?
Out
to pray, I arrest you and your sister Olivette for the murder.
I'll take that gun to play away from
me. Get it,
oh, no, you don't, dear lady. This pair of handcuffs will take care of you.
Get
you need any help?
No, no, I can take care of him.
There. Nice work, Carter. Pair of handcuffs on him. They both keep safely till we can put them behind the bars.
And we can now restore Deering Hall to its rightful owner once more. Even though it's almost a year later... The box that Alex Delanois packed has fulfilled its destiny.
this has been another of the strange adventures of Nick Carter, Master Detective, which are brought to you regularly at the same time by WOR Mutual. What's your story going to be about next week, Nick?
Well, next week I'm going to tell you the tale of the thief and murderer who had to be caught twice before he was really caught at all.
And when Nick caught him the second time, it was because he was able to guess in advance exactly what the criminal was going to do, as well as exactly what he was going to think.
And what did you say the crime was?
Merely a matter of murder and robbery.
There was nothing unusual in the crime itself. The excitement came, and the way Nick chased him, outsmarted him, and finally caught him.
It's a very special example of the criminal who was just a little too clever for his own good.
He overrated himself and underrated Nick.
That's always dangerous where Nick Carter is concerned.
Thanks to the compliment. And so long till next week.
So long, everybody.
And so long to you both. In the strange adventure you've just heard, Nick Carter was impersonated by Lon Clark, Patsy by Helen Choate. Original music was played by Lou White, and the entire production was written and directed by Jock McGregor. Next week at the same time, listen to another curious experience of Nick Carter entitled
The Unwilling Accomplice, or Nick Carter and the Mystery of the Society Burglar.
This story is a copyrighted feature of Street & Smith Publications, Incorporated. This is Mutual.
My name's Jeff Regan. I get 10 a day in expenses from a detective bureau run by a guy named Anthony J. Lyon. They call me the Lion's Eye.
With Jack Webb as Jeff Regan, investigator, stand by for hard-boiled action and mystery and thrilling adventure in tonight's story of The Lady with No Name.
The next time you're out for a drive, pick up Olive Street along about the 700 block. You can't miss it. It's a big building made out of white granite. The Cosmopolitan Building. The man who built it is doing a long run up at San Quentin for graft. Anthony J. Lyon, the guy I work for, rents an office in that building. International Detective Bureau, Suite 308. A couple of rooms with a connecting wastebasket. The Lion has the only desk in the office and a typewriter that Remington dropped from their catalog back in 1915. Well, I walked in last Tuesday at 10 a.m. The office was full of taboo. She was a tall girl, very pretty, wearing slacks and a coat that must have set the mink population back 20 years. But she still looked cold, like she'd never get warm again. The Lion had one arm around her shoulders. He knew by this time that coat was the real article. There wasn't any music, but he didn't seem to mind.
Come in.
Not much room to dance.
We got trouble.
She's your date.
This is one of my operators, Mr. Regan.
How do you do, Mr. Regan?
Now, tell him exactly what you just told me.
Yes. Yes, all right. May I sit down? I feel strange.
Of course. Come here.
Thank you.
Get this, Regan.
I don't know where I live. I don't know my name.
Yeah?
I want you to find out who I am.
You heard that, Regan?
Heard what?
It's a verbal contract. He just hired us.
Oh, you're out of your mind.
And you're a witness in case anything comes up.
Please. Please, I don't feel well. I'm perfectly willing to pay you. You'll just find out who I am.
Well, look, lady, there's a cop on every corner.
I couldn't go to the place.
You got here.
Quit pushing her. This is our case.
I was afraid. I found this in my purse.
Mm-hmm. 32 caliber, Smith & Wesson. Been fired. There's three gone.
What are you doing with that, miss?
I don't know.
It's just been used by you.
I don't know.
Well, where'd you get it?
I just found it in my purse.
Remind you of anything?
No.
You take it.
Now, look, miss, I know you don't feel well, but there are certain questions you'll have to answer.
I just want you to find out who I am. It's terrible this way. It's...
Fainted.
Yeah, you always had a way with women.
Help me bring her around so she can sign that contract.
She hasn't got a name, remember?
We'll give her a name. Jane Doe's good enough.
I guess so.
What do you mean?
She's dead. The lion just stood there. He looked sad, like a water buffalo caught in a drought. Well, when she rolled onto the floor, her purse went with her. It cracked open, and the stuff inside spilled out on the rug. There wasn't anything to tell us who she was. No comb, no makeup. Nothing but a house key and a receipt for a cab ride dated that day. There wasn't even a label in that mink coat. Nothing to go on. I might as well have tried to walk to Catalina. I told the lion to phone the coroner's office, and I hopped over to the cab company. They told me that the receipt came from meter 212, driven by a man named Servi. He worked the call box at Hollywood and Western. He was a little guy. I figured he got the job because they ran out of big uniforms. They double-crossed him on that cap. If it wasn't for his ears, he'd have been wearing a snood.
Sorry, bud. I got a fare.
Where is he? Under the floorboards?
I got a fare.
Yeah, you said that. Where?
In there, eating.
Your flag's up.
I'll pull it down. Happy?
You Johnny Servi?
Whose nose are you?
They told me I'd find Servi in this hack.
Who told you that?
Cab company.
They don't know any more than you do.
Now, look, never mind the jokes. Just give me that straight line.
Nix, will you? Cut out this company uniform.
Well, they're going to get it back if you don't open up.
Get it out.
All right.
Louise pulled out 3 weeks ago. She took all the furniture with her. You can collect from her.
I'm not the finance company.
No?
Here.
Oh, private paper, huh? Well, who's getting conned?
Did you carry a brunette in a mink coat sometime this morning?
Maybe.
Where'd you drop her?
Downtown, 6th and Grand.
Where'd she live?
Ask her. I'm cruising in from the fair.
Where'd you pick her up?
In Burbank, Hollywood Way, and Kensington.
The fair's in Pomona. You took the long way.
I like to drive. It's company gas.
Yeah.
She was nice, real nice. You know what I mean? Real glad.
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute, will you?
Yeah.
We didn't go anywhere, but time's up. That's 5 even.
Fast meter.
Hey, you want me to tell you about the guy?
What guy?
Tall, dark head, brown sport coat, movie type.
Go on.
He was chasing her when she caught my cab. He looked like a mash.
Was it?
Ask him.
Is that all?
She got in. We drove away.
Right here.
Thanks. No tip?
Like you said, we didn't go anywhere. Ever have somebody drop a key in your lap and say, go find a door? Well, I drove out to Burbank and I began looking around for a good lock near Hollywood Way in Kensington. I figured that key I'd found in Jane Doe's purse would have to fit something. I made my letter on the 10th house. There was a for sale sign on it. I didn't see anybody around, so I unlocked the door and went in. Outside of something that smelled like tar and kerosene, the place was empty. I was just about to turn around and leave when a brown sport coat slid into the room. Movie type. When he walked over to me, I knew he drank the right kind of scotch.
Gonna use your GI loan?
I was just looking.
Gotta buy it. To steal.
No, the lady won't like it.
Your wife?
Girl in a mink coat.
You make that kind of dough?
She got it from somebody else.
You Hollywood guys. Where'd you get the key?
I borrowed it. She won't need it.
What's your name?
I didn't have a chance to ask her.
Oh, you're kind of slow, aren't you?
Sometimes.
We'll see how fast you can hit the door.
No, I just got here.
Yeah, now you're leaving.
Cab driver says he knows you.
I'm friendly. I talk to everybody.
Said you were doing a chase scene.
Could be. She was pretty.
They all look good in mink.
It's not the house. What do you want?
Well, we could start with a name.
It's Dameron.
Not enough.
That's all you get, wise punk. Now beat it.
You'll give more at homicide.
I don't see any bad.
Now look, we can play games some other time. A cab driver put the finger on you as the last man to see that girl in mink.
You talk like she's dead.
You call it.
Too bad. There's a lot of fur coats in L.A. and a lot of guys chasing them. You got nothing.
That's what they always say downtown, but you'll talk.
I don't figure on leaving, but you're going on your way right now.
Better open a window, Dameron. You're sweating.
Keep talking, sunshine, or we'll make one in that far wall.
You got help in the back room?
Quit scratching around. It doesn't mean anything to you.
It didn't before she pulled a fade in my office, but it does now.
I'll buy a new carpet. I don't know who let you out, but it's bedtime. You've been talking about a dead girl who doesn't even know her name. Now go back and finish your dream.
You got all the questions. Now let's fill in the answers.
I'm fresh out of box tops. There's a door used.
No, not yet. I'm going to get what I came for.
Little man, that's a promise.
You're out of condition, Dameron.
You're in a great position to throw that line.
Oh, you got talent, mister, but it's still raw.
Come here.
Now, come on, get up. I'm not through.
That's where you're wrong.
It's a big Luger.
Makes the same size hole. All right, punk, you got a name?
A lot of them for you.
Oh! School isn't out yet. Just answer.
It's Regan.
Okay, Regan, let this sink in. Forget you ever saw any dame in a mink coat. Forget you ever saw me.
That won't be hard.
Look, Junior, you just lost the round. Now remember what I told you. Have a memory lapse, is that clear?
You made your point.
Now blow.
You always use a Luger?
Your close work.
Well, then that .32 doesn't fit.
What .32?
The one that the girl was carrying.
You got it?
No, I gave it a homicide.
Good, good. It saves me a trip downtown.
You're not worried?
No, I'm very happy.
Huh?
Today's my birthday. That's the reason you're walking out of here.
The whole thing looks as phony as an undertaker in a white derby. Well, I went back to the office, and the lion was sitting there with a bottle of beer and a sandwich that looked like a couple of end tables. He stopped chewing when I came in.
What's her name?
It's still Jane Doe.
You've been gone 4 hours. Movie?
They don't open till noon.
All right, where you been?
A vacant house in Burbank. I trailed it up from that cab receipt.
What'd you find?
Guy named Dameron.
What'd he say?
Nothing.
Shy?
Tough.
That where you got the egg on your chin?
He was nervous.
When you gonna learn to be nice to people?
He had a gun, too.
Tell me more.
That's all.
I like this. It's got possibility.
All right, take off your saddle. The race is over.
When the coroner's boy showed up, they told me why she dropped.
That's easy. She died.
Poisoned.
Without an autopsy?
Something about her color. It isn't official, but we can work on it.
Suicide?
Murder.
Why murder?
They feed themselves iodine and sleeping pills, but they don't take aliceine.
What's that?
A hot drug with a petrol base. It burns.
Homicide will handle it.
Sure, homicide will handle it. Only we got things to do. We got a stake in this.
You made it a client.
We're going to give her service, dead or alive.
What does Wendetti say?
I don't pay Wendetti. We find out who she is.
All right, you try.
Her picture shows up in the paper. She dropped dead in our office. How's it make us look?
They sent in the first string when she died.
You'll clear this up before homicide does.
They'll lift your license.
We won't need it.
What do you mean?
I still got Exhibit A.
What?
Smith & Wesson, .32 caliber.
You're withholding evidence.
I forgot to give it to him.
All right, now give him a call and tell him.
That was 5 hours ago. You'll make the call.
All right, I'll tell homicide. They'll give me a break.
That's what Dillinger thought.
Give me the gun.
They've got Jane Doe's prints on the wire. They'll have the answer in 10 hours. Cut that in half, Regan, and we've won the championship.
You'll have to give the cup back. You cheated. When I left the lion, he looked happy, like a guy who just figured the mystery melody. I had the gun with 3 bullets gone that Jane Doe had been carrying in her purse, the lion in back of me, the police department in front. That left me about as much chance as a blue peanut on a wedding cake. I knew that if I walked into homicide with that .32, they'd hold on to me like a seasoned pan. I had to find out who it was registered to, so I gambled and I went down to the city hall. I went in the Temple Street entrance, room 11, personnel division. If I pegged it right, I could get the dope on that gun without getting involved. I figured wrong.
Can I help you?
You in charge here?
Lunchtime, yeah.
Whose name matches these numbers?
Small Arms?
Yeah.
What authority?
I just bought it.
Want to know if it's clean?
Yeah.
Caliber and make?
It's a .32, Smith & Wesson.
Okay. Smith & Wesson, .32. Yeah, right here. Got the weapon with you?
No, why?
No rule. No gun, no vitals.
I got it. Here.
Okay. Purchased August 1929, factory re-blue job 1931, owned by American Trust and Loan, permitted to Dale W. Curtis.
Thanks.
I'll have to ask you to wait.
Why?
No rule. Got to run them all through ballistics.
Anything special?
Maybe. Found a guy floating around Silver Lake this morning, full of .32s.
Who?
Working on it. Have to ask you to wait.
No, I can't. I haven't had lunch yet.
Stick around. We may invite you.
I don't like your food.
Oh, don't worry. You can have anything you want the last day.
You're listening to the story of the lady with no name, tonight's adventure with Jeff Regan, investigator. If you are a graduate registered nurse, please listen carefully to this important message. 29,000 nurses are needed to join the new Army Nurse Corps Officers Reserve. If you're a registered graduate nurse, between the ages of 21 and 45, drop a card for complete information to the Adjutant General, Washington, D.C. And now, back to the story of the lady with no name and Jeff Regan, investigator.
Well, there it was. The clerk took Jane Doe's gun and closed the door marked ballistic. I figured he couldn't be too sure about whether that .32 would match up, but I didn't want to wait around to find out. He left the vitals card on the counter. I spun it around and I got the address of Dale W. Curtis. It turned out to be a one-story frame that stood in the way of the new freeway they're building. The movers were just jacking it up and I caught the last carload of people leaving. They told me that Curtis hadn't lived there for 7 years. They did give a number over on Manzanita off Fountain where I might be able to find him. It was an apartment on the second floor. From the looks of the place, it figured that the OPA had a fight on their hands. I rang the bell and waited. I don't know whether it was a lighting effect in that dim hallway, but when she opened that door, I expected to see those thousand ships slide down the ways again. She was wearing some kind of a filmy thing that made a spider's web look like burlap. She had a voice that stole over you like a pint of Irish ale.
I didn't expect you until tonight.
I broke my watch.
Come on in, I'll see if I can fix it. I'm grateful for the swift movement.
Yeah, it shows.
My name's Marlo Curtis.
I want to see your husband.
He's not here.
Do you expect him?
No.
Where is he?
Up north.
Business trip?
Yeah. He sold out.
Oh, what kind of business?
Ask the warden.
Huh?
Dale Curtis is in the prison cemetery. Been there 5 years.
Sorry.
Don't be. He deserves it.
You're going to drown in those tears.
I'm still buying black.
The right color, wrong occasion.
Soda?
What?
Just drink. How do you want?
Well, you're mixing.
Hey. Now, isn't that better?
I don't know. This is my first drink.
You'll get another. The weather's changed.
Nothing here.
You're quick. Must have a good straight man.
Yeah, you.
You get top billing. What's your name?
Regan.
Detective.
Maybe.
Arrest. Sergeant.
I'm due for a promotion.
You'd make a better lieutenant. Come here. If I had anything to do with you, the captain.
Yeah, sure, until you snag your colonel.
You're nasty, too.
Did I pay for my drink?
Get out.
Tell me about this nail file.
You got that out of my purse.
I had one hand free.
You two-bit shadow artist. Now get out. Hello? Yes, he's here.
Yeah?
This you, Regan? You don't know me.
I've been lucky so far.
They should never have taken that gun down to the city hall.
You get around.
You shouldn't be up there in Marlowe's apartment.
You gonna run my life?
Now, I told you what you shouldn't do. Here's what you're gonna do.
Look, Buster, don't crowd me.
You're gonna forget all about today.
The girl forgot a lot of things today and she dropped dead.
Got the idea?
Suppose I don't buy it.
You want a partner for that gun?
Dameron give you the nickel?
He gave me a dime. I got one more call to make to the city hall.
All right, suppose I lay off.
And I got something for my piggyback.
You're no petty girl. Hang it up and get out. You know, Regan, I could have really liked you.
Yeah, Marlo, that's why I'm scared. Well, you can see how things were. I felt like a short girl with a new look. No matter how I tried to break it down, I figured to cop the leading role. A Jane Doe walks in her office and drops dead. She has a gun that probably talked to a couple of people. A cab ride receipt takes me to Bill Dameron, a guy with a talkative gun. I end up in Marlo Curtis' apartment for a lot of punctuation marks. Everybody talks but the people. Well, I knew I'd have to begin to move before homicide tagged me, so I hopped down to the Times and I checked the morgue file. I pulled the clips on Dale W. Curtis. Marlo didn't lie. He was dead. The old papers didn't mean anything, but the banner headline on the night final put one piece of the jigsaw in position. It told about a Treasury Department agent named Shields. They found him in Silver Lake. He'd been shot three times with a .32. Now I knew where Marlowe's nail file fit. I started to leave when I caught the last paragraph. It said, "Unidentified man turns in the murder weapon. Police are seeking his whereabouts." Yeah.
This is Lyon. I've been calling your place for 2 hours.
I just got home.
Gonna give yourself up?
It was your idea.
Who's Jane Doe?
I don't know.
Why?
You got a badge, you try.
Look for you. You're hot. Every prowl car in town's looking for you.
Yeah.
You better start filling this in or they're gonna get you.
Now listen, big shot, you're in this too.
Not from where I sit. I gave you the gun.
Well, send me some dough over here.
I don't have enough for you, Dave.
I need some money for cab fare.
No petty cash in the office.
Don't lie to me. What about that money you got out of Jane Doe's purse?
What do you mean?
She could have never got up there without cab money.
Well, she must have lost it in the elevator.
Look, I haven't got time to play games. Now send it over.
How much do you need?
$10 won't break you.
Where you going to? Yuma?
I'll expect it in an hour. Goodbye.
Hello?
Hello, Dameron.
Always like your door.
That wouldn't stop you. You'd crawl under.
Come on in, fellas. It's drafty out there in the hall.
You got a parade permit?
Rodney, say hello to Reed.
I already did on the phone.
What about Slim?
Are you broken?
His name's Regan, isn't it, Big Mouth? Oh! He's sitting right next to Rodney when he made that call to you. It was perfectly clear to me. Wasn't it clear to you, Big Mouth? Oh! Rodney told you to lay out, but you just had to get onto that newspaper, didn't you, Big Mouth? Rodney, Slim. Slim on the bed.
All right, my go.
Now, Regan, once more, they got a gun downtown. They got a dame and her prince are going to fit it. They got a stiff and that gun's going to fit him, okay? And I'll lay you off.
You said that before.
Rodney Slim, hold his hands. Now, Regan, I know you understand me. I said all the right words. Maybe my punctuation's bad. Lay off. Oof. Period. Lay off. Oof. Period. All right, leave him in the bed.
He's on the floor.
That's fine. Now he won't have to change his bedding.
Dameron was good. When I got up, my face looked like a relief map of Death Valley. He was wearing a signet ring. He left out all the water holes, but the mountain ranges were rising fast. I figured I was safe now. That guy in the personnel office had never recognized me. Well, I was standing in the kitchen giving myself the cold water treatment when somebody knocked. I figured that was a switch, so I opened the door. It was that hacky, Johnny Servi. He had an envelope in his hand. Yeah?
Hi. Remember me?
You give up cab work?
Oh, I found this under your door here.
Thanks.
Football?
What do you want?
Well, you asked me about a dame in a mink coat today. Now, I'm asking you.
I don't run a meter.
Well, I figure all this might help.
Follow what?
Well, I get to thinking about it, see? And then I think some more.
All right, come on, get to the point, will you?
You played a hand, now I'm playing a hand.
Go on.
Well, dames mean trouble, and mink coats, they mean double trouble.
Yeah?
Is it worth five if I remember another guy?
Maybe.
Well, he's all over the papers now. I seen him.
Who?
Shields, the guy they fished out of Silver Lake.
Where?
He was out in Burbank this morning, early.
I thought you were at Pomona.
I was, but... Well, I guess I wasn't exactly cruising. I got a friend lives out that way. Know what I mean?
When was this?
An hour before I picked her up. This guy they find in Silver Lake is walking around that house. I'm looking for a store for breakfast.
All right, you eat.
Well, that's it. After breakfast, I hop in my cab, and that's when I pick up the dame at Mink.
Why'd you bring me all this?
Well, I figure we got somewhere this time. How do I get my tip?
I gave him his $5, and he left. Then I opened the envelope he'd handed me. It was the money that I'd asked the Lion to send over. $2 $5 bills. Well, I looked at it, put it back in the envelope, stuck it in my pocket. So far, all I could see that I got out of this thing was a good beating from Dameron. The question still stood, who was Jane Doe? Well, I knew my next move. I wanted to hop over to the Treasury Department and see if my two matched their two, and maybe between us we could come up with four. I didn't have much to go on. It was just a hunch. I took Marlowe's nail file with me, and I walked in the front door of the federal building. I showed my license to the chief agent.
That's right, one of our agents, Shields. They have the murder weapon down at Homicide.
I know.
All we want is the man that pulled the trigger.
Well, I got an idea.
I'll listen.
What's wrong with these $5 bills?
You can't spend them.
I figured that.
Where'd you get them?
How bad are they?
Lousy paper, rotten ink, terrible engraving job. You could do better with a rubber stamp outfit. Where'd you get them?
Any of these been floated?
We picked up a few.
Were Shields working on it?
That's as much as I can give you. Now, where'd you get them?
The girl faded out in our office this morning.
She was carrying them?
Yeah.
What's her name?
That's what I gotta find out.
Jane Doe, huh?
Well, that's what we called her.
So there's a paper.
Hmm?
Same girl?
Yeah, that's her. Any identification?
Not yet. They've been running a picture for hours.
I'm short on time.
You're the guy.
Wait a minute before you hit that button.
Yeah?
Your addition's good, but you haven't got all the figures.
Don't make book on that. You're the number one boy with me.
You think I'd solo in here?
You might.
No, no. I got an ace.
All right, so you keep your nails clean.
Now look at it.
It's a nail file.
They cut dum-dums out of Shields.
Who told you?
A second-story apartment with a deep voice.
How did you know?
You're holding the file that cut the grooves.
You use it?
I can give you the guy who did.
Dum-dum makes a big hole.
Ask Shield.
Groove a tip of a .32 slug. It'll spread from here to Kansas, my dear.
Can do it with a nail file.
Maybe. Where's that apartment?
No, I'm too close to quit now.
I can't let you go alone.
I got a big car.
Now, before we go, mister, if no one belongs to that file, you belong to the gun.
In that case, I'll have a lot of time to do my nails. Well, it was a long shot, but that's all I had. The agent just sat there on the way over. He didn't say a word. Well, I figured he didn't believe me, but it was a short drive to find out. We hit Manzanita Street just after the dinner time rush. It was quiet, and everybody was eating or they'd gone out for the evening. We climbed the stairs to Marlo Curtis' apartment. I told the agent I wanted to go in alone. He didn't like the idea, but I explained to him that I expected friends and somebody should cover me from the outside. Oh, she looked even prettier than I remembered her. One tear was just about ready to take that last plunge across her cheek.
What do you want?
I brought you a paper.
I've seen it.
You know the girl?
Yes.
What's her name?
Too late.
For you, maybe. I gotta know.
You wouldn't understand.
Try me.
You're still looking for things.
No, not this trip.
You didn't think I could cry, did you?
No.
I learned.
Weeping over a nail file?
I said you wouldn't understand.
It split a slug and a treasury agent.
I don't know.
Well, I do, sis. You filed the grooves.
Shows you how many times you can be wrong in one day, Regan.
Kind of cramped behind that screen, Dameron?
Small apartment.
Yeah.
Always wanted to get the girls a bigger one, but Marlo's getting tried.
You're wrong, Dameron. Not anymore.
You've been around Regan too long, Marlo. Now you got a mouth just like his. Big.
I just figured out what he's been trying to do.
You putting brains on the market, too?
The Jane Doe you've been looking for was Evelyn.
Your sister could have been a rich woman.
Not with the kind of money you printed.
What are you playing this scene for?
I didn't count on her.
Evelyn forgot things.
You killed her.
It was no good. She couldn't tell the fives from the ten.
I'm going to identify her.
You know where that leaves me?
Sure I do. And I'm going now.
You'll have to walk through this Luger.
Is that the same gun he used on the Treasury agent?
You and Regan hardly got acquainted, didn't he tell you? Your sister did that for me.
You're lying.
That, Regan.
Nail file.
That's right. Dum-dums. Evelyn wanted to be sure.
Rotten. Now get out of my way.
Marlo, don't try it.
I'm going out that door.
Not standing up.
It was a real photo finish. Just as Dameron pulled the trigger, the agent kicked the door open and threw a couple of fast ones into him. I'd call it a dead heat, but you'd have to give the agent the edge. His first slug cut Dameron down like a blade of grass. I figured the second was for Shields. Marlo wasn't in a hurry anymore.
Bacon.
I'll call a doctor.
Don't bother. I thought too big now.
They're hurt, baby.
Yeah. I got bigger. I almost made it.
It was a good try.
That was Dagger.
He's all used up.
Good. Regan. You think I'm as bad as him?
No, baby. You just played on the wrong team. He was...
Let's go.
Yeah. From here on, it's a monologue. Well, it was hard to figure. It was like trying to throw a saddle on a porpoise. I gave what I had to homicide, and it unbuttoned something like this. The girl who pulled a quick exit in the office, Jane Doe, was Marlowe's sister, Evelyn. She was front man for Dameron's bad money. She helped him pass it. The Treasury agent, Shields, got a little too close, so Evelyn pumped a couple of dum-dums into him. She did it for Dameron, and then he slipped her the poison. He figured the stuff would work faster, but she lived long enough to take that taxi ride to the office. Well, it didn't begin to make sense until I got down to personnel. I didn't think to check it before, but when I handed the clerk that gun, I noticed the tip of the slugs were grooved. Then over at Marlowe's, I picked up that nail file. It was full of lead filing. From there on, it was a fast reel. Dameron filled in the rest in the fight with Marlowe. Yeah, well, too bad about Marlowe. We might have had something. That's what I don't like about this business. You can't build friendship.
Jack Webb is featured as Jeff Regan, with Herb Butterfield as Anthony J. Lyons. It's CBS at the same time next week for more hard-boiled action and mystery with Jeff Regan, investigator. Written by E. Jack Newman, produced by Sterling Tracy. The role of Bill Dameron was played by Charles McGraw. Yvonne Patey was Marlowe Curtis. Marvin Miller was the Treasury agent. David Ellis, Stacey Harris, Lou Krugman, and Bernice Barrett supported. Original music for this program is by Dick Arant. Bob Stevenson speaking. Jeff Regan, investigator, is heard every Saturday over CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You knew the job was dangerous when you took it.
Radio production.